Hi, I'm Kristen.
And I'm her little brother, William.
We're from the podcast Guide to the Unknown, where we only talk about scary stuff and have a good time doing it.
Come join the scary fun, everyone.
Wherever you get your podcasts, you'll find Guide to the Unknown.
Hometown Ghost Stories contains serious and often distressing events and is not intended for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome, everybody, to another Hometown Ghost Stories horror movie review. Happy October. We are going to be reviewing today 2014's The Babadook. October 1st, that's today. We are kicking off the spookiest month of the year with a horror movie of one of the spookiest horror movies of that particular decade. And this is about as close to a live horror movie review, I think, as we've got, right? Today's October 1st. This thing's pretty much going to air today, right?
So I think so.
That's pretty cool. So it's almost like you're getting a live horror movie review, except it's not, because we already did it. But yeah, this was...
providing for the people.
Yeah. I'm Dave Wilkins. I am currently hosting the horror movie review. We are without Rob Coakley because he had something else going on, I guess. But that's okay. We have Jesse Wilkins here, as always. What's up, Jesse?
How is everything?
So far, so good. So, we are reviewing, as we said, The Babadook, which was a 2014 movie, which was written and directed by Jennifer Kent. This was Jennifer Kent's debut. All right. So, a single mother, plagued by the violent death of her husband, battles with her son's fear of a monster lurking in the house, but soon discovers a sinister presence all around her. So this movie, as we said, came out in 2014, which this decade, basically 2011 to 2019, or through 2019, basically followed what I consider to be the worst horror movie decade of all time, which was 2000 to 2010. Just a ton of horrible horror movies came out in that decade, and then as soon as 2011 comes around, they hit us with Insidious, The Conjuring, It Follows, and this, The Babadook, which was just great movie after great movie. So they really followed up this decade with just a really strong decade, basically, of horror movies. Like I said,
really, really strong 8-year decade, apparently, according to your math. But yeah,
2011 through 2019 would be 10 years. But thank you. 11. 12, 13, 14.
Tops 15, would be 9.
16, 17, 18, 19.
All right, our math is on point this morning here on Hometown Ghost.
We're not here for math. This isn't a math review, okay? This is a horror movie review. So this is Jennifer Kent's debut movie, and it was based on her 2005 short film Monster, which was about a kid with a monster in the closet. Essie Davis was your protagonist, and she did a phenomenal acting job in this. This is one of the best acting jobs in a horror movie I've ever seen. And I can't off the top of my head think of an acting performance that I would say tops this in a horror movie. I would be interested to hear your thoughts on who you think might be better, but this one was really good. And also her son, the kid who played her son, did a really good job. And one of the major things that I hear about people that didn't like this movie was they couldn't stand the kid.
That's the point, though. You're not supposed to.
Exactly. So,
before we jump too far into it, I want to remind people that this is a spoiler-filled review, as all of our reviews are. So if you haven't seen this movie yet, definitely go see it. Spoiler on the spoilers, it's going to get some good reviews from me, this movie. I mean, Jennifer Kent came on the scene and she came in with a bang. So 2014 movie, so if you haven't seen it yet, you're slacking, but definitely go check it out. I don't remember where I watched it, but I believe it was... I think it was on like Prime Video or something like that. I don't really remember, but...
Yeah,
found it somewhere streaming for free, so it's good.
Oh, did you? I actually looked for it last night, but I couldn't find it. So I haven't seen this movie in a couple of years, but it's one of my all-time favorites in the horror genre. And a lot of that is because of the acting performances, they really sold it. And they also they use a little bit of, so the monster was CGI, which typically I don't like. And there were some scenes where the monster jumped out and it was kind of like that cheesy CGI kind of look. But it wasn't overly done. You didn't get too much monster in this movie. And they did a really good job creeping you out, like, to the max. This is a very, very creepy movie. Not a lot of blood, not a lot of gore. They basically just, every scary scene they sold with that creep factor. And they did a really good job with it.
100%. Yeah, so the few scenes that you mentioned that were CGI'd with the monster, I mean, I have a hard time ever really finding those very scary anyways, but they were quick with it, and it was kind of like a glitchy CGI, so it wasn't like, you know, you're staring into the face of the monster. It's just, it's real quick, just jumps right at you. Like the scene where it was crawling across her bedroom roof, it wasn't a bad, I didn't watch the scene, I was like, that was a bad scene. You know, there's a few movies like that where we watched them and they were pretty bad. So fun fact, I looked into the book. So obviously with this movie, it starts off with the Babadook book, right?
Right,
well,
yes.
It doesn't really start off with it, but that's where the kid gets the idea of the ghost is from this book. I looked into this book. I was like, that would be a cool one for the spooky shelf.
Yeah, it would.
Get a little pop-up book with that.
It has to exist.
Cheapest one I could find was $800 on eBay.
No, what? Yeah.
So they do have, I mean, it's a pop-up book. I don't know. I guess you probably have to custom make it, but yeah, there's a few of them there, very expensive. I was like, that's, I don't know, insane. If I could drop that. Yeah, but they do have like versions of it, which is like, you know, the hardcover, you know, looks just like it, but it's a blank book. So you could, I guess, try to make it yourself. And I had thought about it because that you could do for like 10 or 20 bucks or something.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't know if I want to try to make a whole pop-up book. And then God forbid if my kids ever.
Yeah, right.
Up that book.
I was going to say, if it's just that hardcover or like outside thing, you could just buy it, not do anything with it, stick it in your bookshelf so you have it. But
true.
Then you run the risk of somebody saying, oh, cool, and opening it and being like, well, this is just
nothing.
Are all your books like this?
Nothing but a book of disappointment, like my autobiography. Yeah, just
yeah, but no, I liked the I liked the book in the movie and the angle they went with that. I thought that was pretty cool. Basically, the kid has like, he's a big scaredy cat, but he has like this obsession with scary stories. So he like makes his mother read him this book, and she's like, okay, we'll read the book. And she gets a few pages into it, it starts just getting really, really dark, and to the point where the kid just starts freaking out and screaming. And she's like, oh my God, why did I do this? Which one of those scenes in the movie where you're like, this kid is the worst, but it's just, it outlines his like outstanding acting performance.
Yeah, just unbelievable for a kid to be able to hold that acting performance down. I mean, you get so many of these movies where it's like you give the kids a pass. You're like, well, it wasn't a great acting performance, but it's a kid. This is right. A kid, and he nailed this acting performance. There wasn't a scene where I was like, you know, like he must not been, you know, in a good mood that day to act out this scene, which I guess in this movie that would probably work out. Except he's being a pain in the ass because that was kind of his role. But
no, you're absolutely right. It's just one of these acting performances that like, you know, it's good because you can't stand the kid, and that's what they were going for. It's like, you know, Joffrey Baratheon in Game of Thrones. Like everyone hated him, but that was because he was such a good actor and he played that role so well.
Yeah,
that's kind of like what I compare it to. But yeah, this kid was he was really good. So he was scared of the book, and after she reads the book, she gets rid of the book. Well, I don't think it was after the first time that she read the book that she got rid of it. I think it was...
No,
or
exactly.
Did she? Yeah.
Because he wouldn't shut up about the Babadook, and then eventually she just tore the book up, just ripped it to pieces, which was so sad to see, because you're like, that's such a cool pop-up
book.
An
$800 book. What are you doing?
God, you could have put that on your spooky shelf and impressed guests.
Seriously, or sell it.
I will say, I have a vast amount of spooky books on my spooky shelf now, and not a single person has come over to impress them. Probably because I don't bring people over to my house. But right. It's there to impress the masses and to read. Mm-hmm. A lot of good books. I've read the majority of my spooky shelf. It's very fun. I get like trophy books after each episode that we do. So if we do an episode on like whatever haunted location, I order the book, put it on the shelf. It's like it's my little treasure, my little trophy collection of episodes that we've done.
Well, you'll have to order yourself this one. The world's most haunted house.
I thought
William J. Hall.
I thought you were about to bust out the Babadook book.
I'm like, no, that would have been.
You've kept this secret from me.
I spent
$800
on the Babadook book. The Baba book. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the world's most haunted house. That is the Lindley Street Poltergeist, which we will be covering on Friday. Tuesday. Which show is this? What show are we doing? Hometown Ghost Stories. Anyways, back to the Babadook. So once she starts, once she reads him the book, is when this thing starts manifesting, which of course it starts off with like knocking and like ominous phone calls. One of the creepiest scenes in this movie was she gets that phone call in the middle of the night and she picks up and it's just Babadook.
I think that might have been in the middle of the day, but yeah,
I thought it was at night. Yeah, you might be right.
Yeah, the voice that they had for the Babadook thing, whatever you want to call it, demon, I guess. But the voice that they had on this was super, super well done.
Yeah,
and you actually did a pretty good job on it there. I was ready to make fun of you, but you actually did fun.
Thanks. I appreciate you not making fun of me.
Yeah. But so So he's like obsessed with this thing. He's also got these little like Home Alone type contraptions with like his like little dart gun, and then he's got this like potato launcher thing that he mounts on his back.
Little trebuchet.
What is that word?
Catapult.
Oh, okay. Yeah, he's got his little mobile catapult that he's got to for I don't know what, but he's also into magic, so he's doing these little magic shows and stuff, and you get the kind of this sorrowful scene where he's playing down in the basement and he's got all his old dad's his dad's stuff. So obviously his dad had passed away.
That's an important part of the movie, actually. So it starts out with the mother is pregnant with the boy, and her and the husband are driving to the hospital to deliver the baby, and they get into a car accident. The husband dies. Mm-hmm. So she ends up just grief stricken. That's her character, basically how her character is. She's not only is she grief stricken, she also kind of takes it out on her son in sort of a, you know, not like in an indirect way, kind of. She almost resents her son because it was, they're on the way, you know, it was not really that she blames him, but kind of like there's some sort of like underlying blame there that like we're on the way to deliver you and we crashed and he died. And
yeah,
there's one point later on in the movie when she's almost like possessed by this Babadook monster, where she says, every day I wish it was you instead of him, or something on those lines.
Yeah,
it should have been you instead of him.
Yeah, she's going through a string of saying really terrible things that you shouldn't say to your kids during that possession scene. We'll get into that a little bit later.
But yeah, when you mentioned the all of the little contraptions that he would build, which was, you know, interesting angle that they took on in the beginning that ends up taking it comes up again in the end, and it kind of ties everything together. Didn't love that angle. It's the only real negative thing I had about this movie is towards the end there when it kind of just turns into Home Alone.
Exactly.
Home Alone, it doesn't really fit in with horror movies. So
no.
That didn't really work for me, but it made sense the way they tied it together. So I kind of see where they were going with it. I just didn't personally love it myself.
It gave him more of
a purpose.
A little bit of depth. So it's like he wasn't just a pain in the ass kid. He also, you know, like you got to see what he was into, which was
hobbies, right?
Hobbies and magic shows and all that kind of stuff.
Also, which is fine, but if you're using that as a resolution or like a, you know, a hero moment that he saves the day type of thing, I thought that was kind of weak.
Yeah. Far more effective when he just grabbed the butcher knife and stabbed her in the leg as opposed to launching a little potato across the room at her or whatever. But I don't even know if, I don't think it was a potato, but I like saying potato launcher. So we're going to pretend it was a potato launcher. But so obviously she's dealing with the grief and she's very stressed out in this movie. This movie was like obviously a very stressful movie to watch. Like if you were to open the dictionary and look up the word stress, her picture from this movie is the definition of stress. She looks like she hasn't slept in months. Her hair is more and more disheveled every scene. It was just very well done. So obviously she's dealing with him. He's a problem child. He gets kicked out of school for, I don't even remember why. Do you remember why? I don't really remember why.
I remember why.
Anyways, he got kicked out of school, so now she's got to balance the job and figure out who can watch her kid. Her sister does not like watching him because he's just a terrible kid and fights with the daughters. Then you had that birthday party scene where her terrible daughter is tormenting this poor kid, saying that you're not even good enough to have a father. And she's just hazing this poor kid for not having a dad, which when you see this movie, you're like, oh yeah, kids aren't that mean. Yes, they are. So yeah, like they will do that. So she's just harassing him for not having a father. So he just pushes her out of the treehouse. She lands on her face, breaks her nose. And
satisfying scene, to be honest.
Yes. So count that babysitter out of the list of babysitters that'll watch your kid now. So, you know, her situation is just getting worse and worse and worse. Eventually you have kind of her, I don't know, love interest for 2 minutes in the movie, which is this guy that she works with. And he's like, why don't you take the rest of the day off? You know, if your son is sick, because that's what she was saying, that, you know, she was embarrassed that kid had behavioral problems. So she was telling people that her kid was sick. So he sends her home, and instead of going straight home, she kind of just like has some alone time, you know, just goes, grabs an ice cream cone, sits there, ponders life, but just has like a moment of relaxing. And I think that's what, it just keeps spiraling and keeps getting worse and worse. And then you had the really nice old neighbor who would also watch the kid, and she just wants to do nothing but help. But as this movie progresses, Essie's character, she gets so fed up with everything that she's even being mean to the really nice old lady who did absolutely nothing. But occasionally, it's Mrs. Roach in the movie. She would question, you know, she would ask too many questions about the dead husband, and it just hit a vein with Essie for sure.
Yeah, for sure. It definitely hit a nerve. And you know that she meant well. You know, she's just concerned because she sees like how, you know, she sees the family every day, and she sees that they're obviously struggling and that they never really got over this grief of losing the husband there. And but you could tell every time she brings it up, it just strikes another nerve. They did a really good job just ratcheting up the tension that you feel between these characters. And there's just so much like under the surface that goes into this movie. Like you said, the stress, the anxiety, and the tension just is all there, just right underneath the surface, this whole entire movie. And it really adds a completely different element to this movie than I've seen done with other movies, which is one of the reasons that I thought this movie was so powerful.
For sure. So that, I mean, so obviously the haunting is getting worse. The talk about the Babadook is driving the mother crazy. At this point in the movie, you haven't really seen anything quite yet that tells you that it's real until she's driving home from a particularly stressful event. I think it might have been the birthday party, and the kid is freaking out about the Babadook, and then all of a sudden he stops screaming and he like looks off to his side, and it's like apparent that the Babadook is in the car with him, and he stops talking, then he like just collapses and has a seizure in the back seat. And this was kind of the moment where you're like, ooh, maybe this kid isn't messing around, maybe there is something. And you know, she takes him to the hospital, and
yeah, I think it was at this point when she gets back to the house, she finds the book again, and she's going through it, and there's like extra pages that weren't there before, and what was already like a dark and sinister kind of book, you know, like old, before it was like old nursery rhymes, right? You read any old nursery rhymes and they're all dark, you know, like mm-hmm. Ring Around the Rosie, and you know, it's about the Black Plague and stuff like that. Like these really old nursery rhymes just have a really dark, sinister kind of like value to them, which is weird. That's what they choose to read their kids back in the day. But this was like that at first. But as she's reading it again, like I said, there's like extra pages that she either didn't notice the first time or were just simply not there the first time. And it keeps getting darker and more sinister. And that's when she rips it up and brings the book out back and burns it.
At that point, she ripped it up first. And then like the following day, she gets a knock at the door, and she opens the door. She doesn't look down, but she looks out and no one's there. Then there's a huge pounding at the door. And then she opens the door and notices that that book is back. And when she opens it up, all the ripped up pages have been taped back together and it's been repaired. But yeah, you're right. So the extra pages that were added shows her strangling the dog. Little foreshadowing for you there. And then at the point of where she wanted to get rid of the book, it showed her killing her son, also strangling him. And then it had like the cool little animation of the blood coming out of his neck, which was another like pop-up book thing. Like it was the red paper sliding out. It was just really cool pop-up book. And I wish it wasn't $800, but.
Well, that's what you get when you pay $800, you get cool effects like the little blood.
That's right. So at that point she burns it and she goes to the police. And this is where it's like, I don't want to spoil your angle on this, but it's possible that Babadook, the book in general, never even existed in the first place. And the police kind of foreshadow that, like they're kind of giving you the angle that maybe this is just a crazy lady. She's in there. She's got her hands are all blackened from the ash from burning the book. She's like, she goes in. She's like, I have a stalker. He's like, okay. What is he doing? She's like, oh, he's been calling me and he keeps bringing me this book with threatening images. And the guy's like, all right. Where's the book? And she's like, I burnt it. And that at that point, you see like all the officers kind of look at each other like, okay, lady. but that's also the first scene where you see the Babadook, which was just, it was his his jacket and his hat or whatever, hanging on a hook behind the police officer. And you also saw like the creepy long finger hands or whatever. if you'd ever heard of finger hands before. Speaking of creepy long fingers, look who joined us on the show. It's Rob.
Oh, Coker. My God, he's here.
I'm here.
All right, Rob, we're just getting ready to start. You want to kick us off?
Are you just getting ready to start? Or
No. We're getting ready to wrap it.
Progressing through the movie. But yes. Yeah, so at the police station scene, that's the first time that you really see it, and then you start to see it more throughout the movie. But this was an interesting element because it's like, okay, is she just a crazy lady? And right. Is she just... is this how she's handling whatever she's handling?
Which was, I thought, another good angle that this movie kind of took, because it was something I didn't see coming until they presented it to you, and then I was like, oh shit, they're going this way, which was pretty cool. Rob, we're like 3/4 of the way through the movie right now. When was the last time you saw this movie?
Probably around when it came out, but I remember it pretty well.
What are your overall thoughts on it? We haven't gotten to our ratings yet, but.
I remember liking it. And the one thing I do remember about it is I enjoyed it because it was different. There wasn't many horrors that were like this. And I guess, like, I don't want to say this is the first, like, quote unquote, elevated horror, which is a term that I absolutely despise. Mm-hmm. But I do like The Babadook. And the only thing that I would say about it is I'm a little nervous to go back and watch it again. And that's because I'm wondering how that's actually going to hold up with some of the animation and stuff going forward.
We briefly talked about some of the CGI animation, and I think it does hold up. Now, I haven't seen this movie in probably 2 or 3 years, but this is one that I've seen a couple of times. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that we talked about was the CGI monster and how it was kind of CGI monster-ish. You know, if you've listened to our reviews before, you know that we're not a huge fan of that. But they didn't overdo it, was the good thing. And what they did do was pretty creepy.
But they also did something different. Right. So it wasn't done in a style that you've seen before. So the monster looks very different, almost sketch-like. Mm-hmm. So,
like it was in a book.
Right. I enjoy different. Even if I don't overall like the movie, I like directors and writers that try to go in a different direction than other people. So they definitely get brownie points from me for that.
Yeah.
No, they certainly did. It definitely took a whole different angle. I mean, we were discussing this a little bit earlier. The CGI was sprinkled in. Now, I watched this movie again yesterday, so this movie holds up from start to finish. It absolutely does. I was actually kind of surprised that it was a 2014 movie. I felt like it was more recent than that, but I think the movie had been out for a while before I actually saw it. I think Dave, you recommended it, like, oh, you want a good horror movie, check out Babadook. So it did hold up. Still,
yeah, I stand by that recommendation. So if you're listening to this review right now and you haven't watched it, we haven't completely spoiled it yet, but we're going to go watch it. And Rob, you mentioned the term elevated horror. I actually agree with you about not liking that term, because it kind of like implies that all other horror is not as scary. It's like, no, this is really scary though. You know, I don't think that's kind of
kind of pretentious.
Well, yeah. That was exactly the word I was going to say. It's people that want to say that they like certain horror movies, but they're downing the rest of the genre. So they're like, well, I only really like elevated horror.
Oh, yeah. You like movies? Well, you should try out my movies. They're good movies.
Yeah.
It's like, get over yourself.
Yeah. So I as soon as I see somebody write that term, or like in the terms of like, I only watch elevated horror, it's like, I just want to grab them by the neck and then just appear over their bed like a paper mache Babadook and then end their existence.
Yeah.
I'm glad they use CGI instead of the paper mache route. That was good. That was a really tough one. But yeah, this kind of leans into, and you had brought it up, Robert, it was kind of like, is it a sketchbook CGI? That kind of leans into, does this thing exist in the first place in this movie, or is this just this family going crazy? Bad kid, mother who's completely stressed out and hasn't slept in months. So, but the fact that it did resemble the drawing inside the book, you know, makes you really start to question it. So this movie really turns when you see the Babadook, the CGI paper mache Babadook, actually just dive into the mother's body, right? So she breathes him in. You've seen this in a few possession movies where they like actually like the demon just, you know, goes right into your mouth,
like physically. Yeah,
yeah. Every way that I worded that, I kept kind of angling around. I'm like, how do I make this sound better? And then I switched it, and it just kept getting worse and worse.
Which which side are you watching these on, Justin?
Apologize. I watch elevated adult films.
This week on Hometown Ghost Story, sponsored by X Videos. So I have to bring it up. I'm sure you guys already talked about it. Have you talked about the best scene in this movie where they're in the car and the mother just goes,
Wait.
When she's
why can't you just be normal?
And, and then the kid just does the weirdest scream of all time.
Yeah.
It became like a meme. It is like one of my favorite.
It's a meme template that is very effective.
Yeah. I love it so much. So I would just had to touch on that in case you guys hadn't, but I was assuming you had.
No, we actually talked about that scene, but didn't talk about that exact moment. So
Best, the absolute best.
Glad you showed up to save the day.
No problem.
So at this point, like she's like possessed, right? So she's going full batshit crazy. She is saying terrible, terrible things to her kids and the neighbor. And you start realizing that like everyone's that this kid is in serious danger. Obviously the dog was in serious danger as well. And you always hate to see those scenes in these kind of horror movies where the dog dies. Spoiler, the dog does not survive. Poor little doggy gets choked out just like it happened in the book.
Yeah, she picks him up and basically snaps his neck, which was unpleasant. But, you know, it's a horror movie. It's elevated horror. That's what you get with elevated horror. So
this is what they asked for, you know?
This is what you asked for. So, so this is when the movie really starts to pick up. This is kind of like your, the peak. The crescendo, as they say. She's basically full on possessed and she's trying to kill the kid, and the kid, this is where he implements his home alone tactics.
Yep.
And with all of his trebuchet and catapult and crossbow stuff that he made. And like I said earlier, this is the only real part of the movie that I wasn't crazy about. I just didn't like
the home alone tactics was predictable, but also it's like it shouldn't have been effective, but it was, and that was kind of my only, really one of my only downsides to this movie was like, it was a little goofy. But if you notice also in these scenes, she isn't just like crazy lady, she's also moving around like the Babadook, like her arms are out to the side with her fingers out and she's like gliding across the floor in a couple scenes. Really cool, really well done. And it was clear that she had become this monster and tries to kill the kid. She's obviously battling internally with it and ends up not killing him, obviously. And
one of the things that they did with her character when she first became possessed and starts taking on the characteristics of the character traits of the Babadook was she was in bed and he came saying that he's hungry or something. And she started talking like the Babadook from the book, where she's like laying down in bed and she goes, if you're hungry, then go cook, 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 or something on those lines. And it was just, it was creepy. It's like, wait a minute, she just talked like the Babadook. Is she? You know?
She had a wild suggestion. She's like, if you're hungry, why don't you just go eat shit?
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, man. You know. I don't talk to my kids like this, but those thoughts go through my head.
Yeah. The 19th time they ask you something. 100%. But, so this movie picked up pretty fast and, you know, they'll go through that whole end scene, and the end of this, the way the movie ends was a lot of people didn't like it because it was weird. It was definitely a non-traditional ending. They didn't like defeat the Babadook. They basically, the way it ended was they kept it locked in the basement and they would like bring it food. So I've seen a lot of people hate on this movie because of that ending. They're like, well, that's stupid. What is that? But what it is the whole movie is a metaphor for grief. So it starts out where the father dies in the car accident and the family's dealing with grief. So the Babadook monster is a metaphorical, basically embodiment of grief. So you don't beat it. You never get over it. You just keep it locked up inside and feed into it and you learn to live with it.
Well, you saw the stages of it too. So in the beginning of the movie, she's denying it, right? So she's in the denial phase. Later on in the movie, she accepts that it's real and she's afraid of it, right? And then at one point, she let it overtake her, which would be the angle where she's killing the dog and about to kill the kid, where it's like it had consumed her, right? And then she literally vomited it out, and then they decided to live with it. Because you're never going to forget, right? You're never going to be like, all right, well, let's just move on. Husband's dead. F that guy. We're you know, it's always going to be there. So they've learned to live with it. And I think that is definitely the best angle. When I first saw this movie, I was like, that's a weird ending. I didn't dislike it, but I thought it was strange. And then as soon as you had brought that up originally, you told me, like, you know, this is the monster is a metaphor for grief. I was like, ah, yeah, that makes sense, actually. And then when I thought about the ending more, I was like, ah, that makes a lot of sense, actually. So I think you're right about that.
Yeah, it was a really good job by Jennifer Kent in her directorial debut. Yeah, she wrote and directed it, so it was a really good job. I don't know what else she's done besides like this short story that inspired this movie, but this one was good. So if we're basing it on this movie alone, I would say she is an excellent director. Rob, do you have thoughts on the ending, or do you want to jump into some reviews?
Let's hit the reviews. Is where I would say we go, because I don't have anything to add to that ending. You guys kind of nailed all of that.
All right. For me, this is a 4.95 star.
Wow.
Movie. It's almost a five star. Didn't like that one little, like I said, the Home Alone kind of thing was, I thought it was kind of lazy and lame. But aside from that, the movie was almost perfect.
I'm at a 4.5 on this. Like, I think it's really good. It's not my favorite horror movie, and I don't think it's unrewatchable, but I've never craved to go rewatch it, but I also recommend it, if that makes sense. So yeah. I think it's one that I was fine with watching once. I might watch it again in the future, but I think it's one that you should watch, and I think it's pretty good.
This one's I go to 4.9. It's right there. It was just, I don't know. I don't really have anything negative to say about it. I didn't really care about the Home Alone stuff. It was just, could have been a tiny bit scarier at moments. But I think the ending works and it's different. So I appreciate the ending, but it also didn't leave you scared at the end. I don't really know if that was what they're going for, but in a horror movie, you should still have that element of danger. I don't know, but it was really, really, really one of my favorite horror movies ever. And it's absolutely rewatchable, and it definitely holds up, as Dave would say, 9 years later.
Yeah,
9 years.
Exactly.
Somehow it's already almost 10 years old.
I know, right?
Means time is going too fast.
Too fast. Slow down, indeed. I say.
Go ahead. We're about to do the same thing.
Let's do the same thing. Yeah, so that was the Babadook review. We are going to be doing several reviews of several horror movies all throughout the month of October. It is going to be a spooky horror-filled month, so stay tuned for many more to come.
Yeah, and if you have any suggestions, hit us up on Discord or tweet at us or whatever. So if you have a horror movie that you think holds up, we're trying to review good horror movies in October, so we're hitting a lot of the classics. We're hitting some movies that we know are good, and
we'll sprinkle some bad ones in too.
Yeah,
it's not fun if we don't do some bad ones too.
It's way more fun to bash a movie than it is to
rave
do a good review. Yeah, so yes. we gotta sprinkle in some bad ones as well, but that's that. If you guys haven't already, join the Discord, and that's the best way to reach out to us and tell us all of the movies that you want us to see. We got a few suggestions, and we're gonna hit on those for sure. But real quick, let's go and thank our patrons. We have our VIPs. We have Stephen V, Lisa J, Jimmy H, Justin T, and then we have Ma and Pops Wilkins. Other patrons are Mariah M, Kirlie Johnson, Rachel B. We have Anthony, Angry Dave Rocks T, Matthew T, Cody G, Sydney B, Mark M, Papa Squatch, Steven. Oh, we're just saying thanks, Steven. You don't get two thank you, Steven. You get one is enough. Mike B, Brandon W, Sarah W, Soph M, Hooper, Jake V, Stephanie A, Seth, Dave Sucks W, Captain McSlugs, and Sarah R, who is Sarah Dave Loves Bacon R. Let me finish that one off. So thank you guys so much. And if you're interested in being on Patreon, getting early access to content as well as lots of other bonus stuff and swag and all sorts of things, consider joining on Patreon, patreon.com/hometownghoststories. I think that'll pretty much do it, gentlemen. Anything else?
That's going to do it for me.
All right. We'll talk to you soon.
Murder in America is a true crime podcast that covers stories from all 50 states, including stories of mass shootings, serial killers, and lesser-known murders. Do you find yourself doing more research after listening to a true crime show? Well, Courtney and I used to do the same thing, and that's why we created Murder in America. Our podcast dives deep into each case. Our storytelling will make you feel like you're right there within the case with us, watching it all play out, and we do not shy away from the graphic details. If you're a fan of true crime, then listen to Murder in America on Spotify now.